It's time for All Things Northwest. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses. Welcome to All Things Northwest. I'm your host, Patty Holly, filling in this month for Northwest Missouri State University President, Dr. John Jasinski. All Things Northwest is devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration and the developments throughout our region, and there is much to celebrate. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners KXCV KRNW hope you're enjoying the dog days of summer. I'm pleased to welcome you to the August edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. In segment one, we feature Northwest Missouri State University Provost Dr. Timothy Mote. In segment two, we feature Taryn Marie Humphrey, United States gymnast and athlete representative for USA Gymnastics. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Northwest Missouri State University Provost Dr. Timothy P. Mote. As a leader in higher education, Dr. Mote has a record of success in developing high-performing educators, being fiscally responsible and innovative in revenue generation, administering strategic planning processes, and building consensus among diverse groups of individuals that enhance efficiency and quality. Dr. Mote is recognized for using communication skills that encourage perspective-taking, diffuse negative emotions, and facilitate difficult conversations. Dr. Mote served as Dean of the College of Fine Arts and Communication at Texas State between 2011 and 2014. From 2007 to 2011, he chaired the Department of Communication at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. Before that, between 1998 and 2007, he was a professor of communication at Texas State. He has co-authored four books and published over 60 peer-reviewed journal articles and book chapters. Dr. Mote has been listed among the top 20 most prolific researchers in the discipline of communication studies. His research examines the intersections of communication, personality, and cognition, and their application to instructional, organizational, and interpersonal contexts. He and his colleagues are currently researching the communication effectiveness of pediatric trauma team members in hospital emergency rooms. Dr. Mote has a BA in communication from William Jewell College, an MS in mass communication from Boston University, and an EDD in communication education from West Virginia University. He was a 2010 participant in Harvard University's Management Development Program for Higher Education Leaders. Prior to his career in higher education, Dr. Mote was Director of In-Flight Service for Northwest Airlines, where he administered training and development programs, human resource services, and labor contracts to customer service employees. Dr. Mote, thank you very much for joining us for All Things Northwest.
Thank you for inviting me.
There are changes happening behind the scenes at Northwest Missouri State University, and one of those is a move towards profession-based learning.
Right.
What is that?
Well, profession-based learning is a concept that emerged from a number of I was new to campus 2 years ago, started looking at what Northwest is doing and what I think Northwest is doing in a unique manner, and I just mentioned to a variety of people that this is an institution that has its roots, I believe, in profession-based education going all the way back to the Normal School and Horace Mann, in addition to our strong programs in communication and agriculture and several others. So it's a university that is grounded in preparing individuals for professional life. And so I just started asking the question, is that something that we maybe should elevate as a way to differentiate us from other institutions? And so this is an emerging academic vision. There's a lot of work that needs to be done yet, but I think we're making strides and moving forward and have some pieces in place.
What is the difference between profession-based learning and what people traditionally think of
Yes.
as learning?
Well, Yeah, so profession, you know, I think that sometimes people equate profession-based learning with hands-on learning. And so I think there's a lot of institutions that do hands-on learning, but profession-based learning, some of the tenets of profession-based learning, it begins with the curriculum. It is our faculty's willingness to work with industry professionals and making sure that our programs and the curriculum is aligned with industry standards to make sure that the curriculum is relevant, that our curriculum is current. So we'll start there. And then I think the other piece is it's not just you know, this is not a bumper sticker. There's curriculum pieces to this. There's a curriculum piece. There's a pedagogical piece. There are facility pieces to this. And so the instructional, the pedagogical pieces or the instructional pieces are doing, you know, some of what we already do. We have a program called NACTIV, which is an interdisciplinary group. It's an ad agency, a multimedia ad agency, where we bring in real life clients. A group of students get together with a group of faculty, and they get credit for this, and they solve a problem. And we also have another program called Integrated Digital Media. It's another integrative programming that includes faculty from across the university working together and educating students on cross platforms, cross technologies as it relates to digital media. So it is taking those concepts and it's expanding them across other areas where our faculty and our students are engaged in problem-based learning using more of a multidisciplinary approach. So that's the piece that's in front of us. And we have clear examples of how you do that, and we do that well. It's replicating that across the campus.
It sounds like it's more than going to businesses for an advisory council, but it's actually getting hands-on experience.
Yeah, then. The advisory councils are at the front end, and the advisory councils work with us on making sure that the curriculum is current. And many of our advisory council members are giving us workplace problems and giving us real-life clients. So we're taking advantage of our advisory committees for curricular relevance, getting clients that we could use to solve problems.
How does our strategic plan work into this?
Yes, I think the strategic plan, this year we have gone through a strategic plan revision process, and a theme that emerged out of that is a renewed emphasis on learning. I think it's a very important piece. The university, we spent a lot of time and good time on making sure that students enroll, students complete, students persist, they retain them, and we get them placed. And we spent a lot of time focusing on that. The learning piece is, if we focus on learning, and we are a comprehensive teaching institution, but if we focus on a comprehensive learning institution across the board, the enrollment, the retention, the completion, and the placement is going to happen. And so it is reminding us and putting at the center of our work, what is student learning? How does it occur? Developing us from the cognitive science and the learning sciences, are we schooled in what learning is and how to teach in a learning-compatible manner? And so the strategic plan is refocusing on learning, and profession-based learning is just taking that learning and keeping it real, keeping the goal in mind of a student graduating from the institution, first and foremost, as a solid citizen. But their professional role has a responsibility to citizenship that we think is really important. And so it's some critics might say this is job training or career training. We disagree with that. We're producing highly engaged, well-informed citizens who can advocate for themselves, their families, their organizations, for their communities, their schools. And they can do that because they are established in a professional field. And because of that profession, they have a responsibility to citizenship. And so that's the model, and that's how it ties and links to the learning part of our strategic plan.
Now, Northwest has been growing recently and reaching out beyond the campus here in Maryville. Recently, Northwest partnered with the City of Gladstone,
yes,
with the North Kansas City Schools and Metropolitan Community College, Maple Woods.
Yes.
How will the Northwest Center, or the Kansas City area be involved in this?
Well, that's all of this is tied together. Our involvement with the Northland CAPS program, which is the Center for Advanced Professional Studies. It's a high school program in the Northland region of Kansas City, and seven different school systems in the Northland region, which is where most of our students come from. High school students have an opportunity to work in industry, in organizations for credit toward their high school diploma. And we are partnering with Northland CAPS in offering dual credit opportunities for many of these students as well. And our influence, our involvement with the Northland CAPS program is also very profession-based at the high school level. And so it dovetails nicely that the students who are in our catchment area may be attracted to an institution that is also profession-based in its approach. And I have to say that a lot of what we're doing and thinking about doing has been influenced by the Northland CAPS model as well. So it's a natural fit for us, but the Northwest Kansas City Center, which is our new facility in Gladstone, we have a new facility there that we're calling Northwest Kansas City, and it's in Gladstone, and that will be a facility that serves a variety of different students. One would be for the student who wants to come to Northwest Maryville and needs more information. So they have services there that can guide them into how do I come to Northwest Maryville. But the Northwest Kansas City will also serve the more place-bound student who maybe wants to save on the room and board or who needs to save on the room and board. They can't financially support it, or they have other family obligations or work commitments. They can, through the Metropolitan Community College, transition into one of our several completion programs. And so that's also exciting. So it's set up to provide a variety of different services to a variety of different students.
And it is involved in the profession-based learning?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the Northwest Kansas City, yes. The programs that we're offering at Northwest Kansas City are the academic vision that's emerging, the profession-based learning at the Northwest Maryville campus. That will be a part of Northwest, period, regardless of which campus you're on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has it already been implemented at Northwest Kansas City, or has it been implemented anywhere yet?
It hasn't been implemented anywhere.
So it's still.
So this is a, and I want to kind of back up just a little bit. It has been implemented. It's a vision that is emerging. It's one that I think our faculty are getting used to. I think our faculty are shaping profession-based learning. I think we've had a number of discussions about the role of the profession, the professional, and the citizen. And so faculty have helped shape those conversations. But the Faculty Senate has already passed two courses that that fit a curriculum. One is called Early Career Exploration that gives our first two-year students, the freshman and the sophomore year, it gives them an opportunity to go out and do career exploration for college credit. And then we have the internship. And the difference is the internship is when the student is making a contribution with the skills and the knowledge they have acquired. The early career exploration is more job shadowing, trying to figure out where do I see myself making the best contribution and the one that is a fit for me in terms of professional life. And so internships, we believe, come too late in a student's career. Early career exploration gets them early on. That course has been passed by our Faculty Senate and supported by the Faculty Senate. The other one is a course called Profession-Based Essentials. And Profession-Based Essentials is a course that addresses the need for professional skills that we constantly hear from our professional advisory boards. From how do you communicate in business? How do you write in business? How do you dress for business? How do you behave? How do you act? Work ethic. Ethics of work, it is all of those pieces. And so it is a socialization piece, making the transition from higher ed to the first day on the job less painful. So,
when will these classes be available?
They are available. They were available last year. So interestingly enough, it's an emerging vision, but in many ways the faculty are ahead of the vision in the fact that they've already passed two of these courses. And those courses were passed as a way to work with our Northland CAP students to give them some dual credit opportunities for the work that they're doing. So this is very much an iterative process between Northland CAPS in the Northland region and our new facility in Gladstone and what's evolving here on this campus. It's an iterative back and forth process that's emerging, and it's very exciting.
What is the status of academic restructuring for profession-based learning?
That's another good question. We have recently gone through an academic restructuring, and you don't just restructure just for restructuring's sake. So that we had really three clear reasons why we have restructured. One of them was some HR changes through attrition and through some retirements. It provided an opportunity. So if we're going to restructure with some retirements, this is an opportunity to do so. The second piece was the strategic plan's emphasis on learning. And with a renewed focus on learning, we needed a vice provost, a full-time vice provost. Our vice provost has had multiple roles simultaneously, but we need a vice provost who can help us focus on assessing learning outcomes, on conducting academic program reviews to ensure that the quality is there and that we're documenting learning and helping all faculty understand learning outcomes, how to assess learning. And this is needed for not only accreditation purposes, but most importantly, it is needed as a feedback loop to enhance the teaching process, to improve the learning process. So the whole restructuring was allowed to provide us with a new vice provost who's in her third day with us at Northwest. And then the other reason was the profession-based learning piece. Through the restructuring process, we were able to develop professional schools. And so professional schools are not new to higher ed, but they are new to Northwest. We've been structured around a college structure. We've had three colleges, and that's been our structure. And we inherited that model from the European model. We've gone a little bit differently, and we're going to be moving toward professional schools, and we have restructured, and we will begin this fall with six professional schools and one College of Arts and Sciences. The College of Arts and Sciences is at the epicenter of our organization. That's where it all starts. And then students migrate into their disciplinary studies, and many of those are going to be in one of our six professional schools. And our professional schools include a School of Business, it includes a School of Agriculture, a School of Health Science and Wellness, it includes a School of Communication and Mass Media, a School of Computer Science and Information Systems, and there is one more.
Education?
And it is the School of Education. So those are the six professional schools, and again, those surround the College of Arts and Sciences and the Liberal Studies. So profession-based learning is it's a balance between liberal studies and the disciplinary studies coupled with the professional skills, those profession-based essentials.
Will the changes that are taking place by, you know, creating the schools of learning and the profession-based learning, will that require an investment in the facilities?
Great question. The restructuring has not required any additional resources from the university because we've reallocated resources. But moving forward with a profession-based learning vision for the institution, I believe will require, and I know it will require, an investment. And so we are currently in a facility that has been invested in, that is a part of profession-based learning called KXCV, where we've got students working behind the scenes, this is an example of profession-based learning. We are investing in the Wright Farm, because the Wright Farm is our learning laboratory for our School of Agricultural Sciences. We've got Horace Mann that needs an investment, and Horace Mann and making sure that our lab school is where it needs to be. But other places where we need to invest resources with a profession-based vision moving forward, as I see it, would be in a repurposed library that would be a library, but a learning commons, And a part of the Learning Commons would be a set of professional learning studios. And a vision would be that students who are involved in semester-long projects or who are involved in year-long projects, they need a space to do their work. And so I envision, and I think we envision, a set of professional studios with a 24/7 access that students have access to go and do their work. In addition, they have a residence hall, they have a professional studio where they work, in addition to their classes. And so an idea would be a professional learning studio. The other investment, as I envision, it would be in a leadership academy. I think there's a space needed for a leadership academy that are where students, that provides programming and services and helps develop leadership skills and allow students to maybe leave with a minor in leadership studies. That's a concept. And then a third piece would be an expanded, where we combined career services and our advising assistance. Where students have professional advisors for their first year at the university, a first-year center where your professional advisor is also a certified career specialist who can walk you through some self-assessments and guide you in your career exploration, but start mapping programs to your career goals. And so those are all visionary pieces that I believe have a facility implication as we move forward with the visioning process.
It sounds like this will help the student who comes to college without an idea of what they want to do.
Absolutely.
When they're done. This will give them a way to go.
I think it's perfect for the student who doesn't have a clue, but I also think it's perfect for the student who thinks he or she knows what they want to do. But after talking with career experts in the advising process, they reshape it, they fine-tune it, they tweak it. In many universities, your career services is that place where you go your senior year. We want career services and professional advising to be the same people. And we want that to be the first people you see when you walk in the door. So we're not saving career services for the last year. It's at the front end of the universe, at the front end of the experience, the same way as that the internship is, the early career exploration is at the front end. And I think that is, so I think the piece here that's it's important for students, and there's another piece that it's a visionary piece, but it would be for faculty who have an interest in having a desire to be away for an extended period of time and working in industry. So a faculty externship process, and where we ask who would be interested in this and finding ways of getting them embedded in industry where they could work in an industry and make a significant contribution and learn a lot and then come back to the university. So it's kind of the sabbatical idea, but it's a professional learning externship for a faculty member to make their work meaningful. And so there's a student development piece, but I see this as also having a faculty development piece and investing in our faculty to enrich that experience.
It sounds like, in addition to helping the faculty grow, that this is really focused on the student and giving them some direction while they're here. But what's the benefit when they have that Northwest degree?
Yeah, the more we go down this path, I see us as being highly differentiated, and the differentiation, as I see it, is in the profession-based approach. Our faculty keep it real. We understand. I think we take great pride in being accessible, affordable, and developing good citizens who have professional lives. And I think we're developing systems and processes and developing people to make sure that students leave here with a meaningful profession. Not any profession, but a meaningful one, and one that allows them to make civic contributions. That I think is really going to be the differentiator. The other piece that I have come to understand and learn is the investment. And this is a personal investment that our faculty and our staff make in students. There's a lot of institutions where people, they are committed to their students and they work with their students and they're serious about that process. Here we have that, but there is it's to a different degree. There is a personal investment. And to me, that is different. And the personal investment is the faculty and the staff member who takes responsibility and accountability for the success of a student. And they are willing to invest their time and their energy and their resources in making sure that that happens. So it's a matter of degree. There's a different level of seriousness there, and it's a personal investment, and I don't see that happening at other institutions. I see that happening here.
I know this is a program that will probably always be working. There will be work going on involving this, but
absolutely.
Do you see a time when you say, yes, we are now a profession-based learning institution?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And I don't think we'll ever get there because professions are constantly changing. I think we will have a model where the model will be in place, but the model needs to be, but the pass-through, the flow-through, the curriculum, the teaching, the facilities, and how we work with students, it'll always be changing, but the model will be in place. And so it's important for me that our professional advisory boards, our students, and our faculty and our staff are constantly shaping this. And so much of what I've talked about is vision. We have faculty involvement in this process. There's going to be a lot more of that needed. But I believe we've done a restructuring. We've got some curricular pieces in place. I think we've got some capital campaign or a comprehensive campaign investment in facilities and services that are going to dovetail nicely into this. We've got Northwest Kansas City and a strategic plan that is aligned toward a university that I think is poised for the 21st century, that is mindful of what it costs for a student to become college educated. And so I think this is our way of being accountable and getting that return on that investment in a meaningful life. So,
is there anything about this that I've missed that we need to point out?
The one piece was that faculty externship piece, which is important to me. It's what's important to me is that our faculty and our staff are engaged in meaningful work. And I've been around people who where that hasn't happened, and I prefer working at institutions where they're engaged in meaningful work. And if it's meaningful, then students are going to have a meaningful experience. So a number of conversations ahead, but I'm feeling this. I think we've done a pretty good job here.
Okay. Exciting changes are underway at Northwest.
I'm excited. Yeah.
Dr. Motte, thank you very much
you
for
bet.
Joining us for All Things Northwest.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Taryn Humphrey. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Atchison Holt Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. Atchison Holt Electric reminds you to be safe this planting season by knowing the locations of power lines and keeping farm equipment at least 10 feet away. More information is at ahec.coop. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Clarinda Regional Health Center. Celebrating its 75th anniversary, CRHC has been providing health care in Southwest Iowa and Northwest Missouri since 1939. More at clarindahealth.com. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from United Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Missouri and Iowa. United Electric reminds you to be safe this planting season by knowing the location of power lines and keeping farm equipment at least 10 feet away. More information is at ueci.coop.
Welcome back to the August edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, Patty Hawley, filling in for Dr. Jasinski this month. We're joined now by Taryn Humphrey. Taryn is a United States gymnast. She was a member of the 2004 Olympic team in Athens, Greece, where she helped the team win a silver medal. Ms. Humphrey competed on bars and beam in the team finals and contributed solid scores of 9.587 and 9.487, respectively. She also competed in the event finals on the uneven bars and won a surprising silver medal for the United States. This was the best uneven bars result by an American woman in the Olympics since Amy Chow took silver in the 1996 Olympics. Currently, Taryn is the athlete representative for USA Gymnasts and is one of three that's on the USA Olympic Selection Committee, and she's been with the team in Houston for their final training before leaving for the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio. Taryn was born in St. Joseph and lived in nearby Albany before moving to Bates City to be closer to coaches Al and Armin Fong at Dragon Gymnastics at Great American Gymnastics Express. She's a graduate of Odessa High School and the University of Alabama. Taryn, thank you for joining us today. Let's talk about your career in gymnastics. What was it that made you want to compete in gymnastics?
Well, actually, when I was about 2 years old, I was climbing all of the cabinets and just getting into trouble. And my mom and dad were like, we have got to put her energy into something. So it was either ice skating or gymnastics. And my dad wanted me to do gymnastics because ice skating was too sissy for him.
Well, so how did you get your start then? Was there a place nearby for you to practice?
Yeah, I actually started in St. Joseph, Missouri at Robin Wiedmeyer's gym at a Rising Stars. And when I was about 9 years old, I kind of outgrew the gym, and she didn't know how to coach the higher levels. And during state meet, we saw Al Fong's kids from Gage, which is where I ended up training, but he was beating everybody in the state. So my family thought it was a good idea to move to Grand Valley area and train with Al. And then that's how I started with elite gymnastics and gymnastics in general.
Now, a lot of boys and girls take gymnastics classes and they dream of someday maybe representing the United States in the Olympics, but it's not easy to do. What was it that pushed you to become a world class and an Olympic athlete?
Definitely. Every little kid walking in that gym, they want to go to the Olympics. They want to do, you know, compete for the USA, but there is a lot of hard work, and you have to, the United States in particular, you have to leave school and leave your family sometimes once a month to go to Texas and train at the Olympic Training Center. But at that point in time, I knew I had talent and I knew I had the work ethic. And my father would always tell me, work hard now and have no regrets. So if you want to go to the Olympics, then work hard and do it now so you don't look back in 10 years and think I should have done that. So that's what kept me working hard every day and doing more numbers in the gym and just, you know, repetitive motion over and over.
It sounds like your parents were very supportive in this.
Yes. All throughout my career, my parents have always been supportive. My mom and dad both worked three jobs, and I know they had a lot of slack with people telling them, oh, why are you doing this? Why are you putting your family on hold just to help her gymnastics? So, but they never stopped believing in me, and they worked just as hard as I did.
So many parents see their children performing in whatever sport it may be, but specifically in gymnastics, and they think that they're very good. But how do you know you have a future Olympian?
I don't really know because I don't have kids yet. But just being a coach, you can just tell. Like they're a different breed. They want to always do more numbers. They want to. They want to beat everybody every time. They're so competitive.
Is that what you found yourself doing?
Yeah, as a coach, I definitely see. Well, at my gym in particular, we train level 10s, and our goal is to have a gym with college scholarship athletes. So, you know, not everybody wants to go to the Olympics, and getting a scholarship is just as rewarding sometimes as the Olympic Games.
What are your best memories from your career in gymnastics?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many. One in particular was in 2003, I made the world championship team. And at the last minute, they pulled me. And it wasn't because I was hurt. It wasn't because I was sick or was doing anything wrong. They just thought another athlete could outscore me. And I ended up competing and doing, like, a really good job. And our team was the first ever in history to win a gold at the World Championships. So that was pretty cool.
Now, after the 2004 Olympics, you received a full-ride scholarship to Alabama, is that correct?
I did, yes.
And you were successful in college gymnastics. After all those years training for the USA team and for the Olympics, what was it like to compete in college?
I actually only competed 3 years in college. I was 11-time All-American and 2-time NCAA champion. But for me, college was a lot harder than training for the Olympics, and that sounds crazy. But from when you train 40 hours a week to 20, it's so, like, for an elite athlete, it's hard to kind of, I don't want to say dumb down your skills, but it's hard to maintain your level of gymnastics if you go from a high level of gymnastics to low. So it was actually a lot harder for me to compete at college level.
It sounds like maybe you were busier because you had classes and training.
Right. And at that time, I went from the Olympics to tour, where you tour for about 3 months. And we had 48 cities that we run around the United States to tour, and then straight to competition season. So at that point in time, I was so burnt out, and I was just ready to be done. And after my first year of college, I told my coach, I was like, I'm not setting foot in the gym. So That next year was a little rough for me.
He got you back in, but you weren't happy about it, huh?
Exactly.
Well, now you're the athlete representative for USA Gymnastics. How did you get this job?
So basically, you have to have a criteria, and it's kind of like a point system. You have to have been in the at the Olympic Games, competed in the Olympic Games, and I was also elected in. So the girls elected me.
What are your duties and your responsibilities in this position?
So I'm on the selection committee, which means I have to kind of do what I used to do when I was training. I have to go to every camp. I have to go to every competition within the United States, and I travel once a year to go internationally with the kids. And so basically, I'm on the selection committee, and then I change my hat, and I'm the their ear if they need to vent, or, you know, just kind of a friend, or just there for them if they need me.
How long have you been doing this?
I was elected in 2009.
And then is there a time when this position ends?
So I am on you can be elected 2 times. So I just recently got reelected, and then I got extended 2 years. So my term is going to be a 10-year term, which has never happened before.
So through 2019?
Yes.
Okay, well, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
For the past 2 Olympics, you've been one of just 3 people to help choose the USA Women's Olympic teams, and you had a hand in helping to choose this year's team. What can you tell us about the team heading into this year's Olympics in Rio?
Heading into Rio, our girls are just completely unstoppable, and even from the trials, they have upgraded and been more consistent and are way better than trials. So I'm excited for America and the world to see these girls compete.
There were 14 women for 5 spots and 3 alternates. Is that correct?
Yes.
That must have been a difficult choice.
Oh, it was very difficult, especially now when USA is so talented that they could put 2 teams out there and we'd still win.
So tell me a little bit about the what the experience was like for you when you were helping to choose that team and you saw all 14 girls competing.
To be honest with you, it gave me a little bit of a headache. It's hard on this end because it just hits you that your position will affect these kids for the rest of their lives. So it's very, very stressful. But at the same time, I'm 1 of 3 in the entire United States that has this position. So I'm very honored that they trust me enough to be in this position.
We want all of the girls to win gold. But do you see any standouts in any events where the United States is likely to dominate?
Absolutely. We should win everything, to be honest with you. We have our secret weapon, Simone Biles, and she's usually pretty far ahead of everybody. And then individually, you know, we have Madison Koshin that will just dominate on bars. And so we should win just about everything we compete in.
So we have a well-rounded team?
Yes, ma'am, definitely.
All right. Well, it'll be fun watching them throughout the Olympics this year.
Yes, that'll be great.
Well, let's get back to you. What are your future plans?
Well, I have this job for another 3 years. And when I go home, I am at a local gym, Extreme Gymnastics, and I coach and choreograph. And then, actually, when the girls come back to the Olympics, I will be their chaperone when they go on tour. So it's 9 weeks, and I will tour the cities with them and help them and make sure that they stay in good shape. And then when I get done with that, I'm going to finish massage therapy school.
All right. Sounds like an exciting time for you, Taryn.
It is. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today and wish you the very best of luck.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Dr. Timothy P. Mote and Taryn Humphrey. Thanks, too, to our producer, Karen Lawrence, a student here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. I'm Patty Hawley. Thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, Northwest Missouri State University, KXCV KRNW, and Public Radio. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at 660-582-5222. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.